sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. The other night, dear, when I lay sleeping, I dreamt I held you.
Good morning, boys and girls. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana, right here next to P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations, and it's time for October donations, and several of you have already got them in. That's good. Thank you. Yeah, and we're right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Fillet Station. And then that's right next to the Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where we're getting ready to close up for the winter. Yeah, pretty soon. Maybe a couple of more weeks we'll keep it open for you latecomers who want to get your 18-wheelers over here and pick up your Weapons of Mass Destruction. Get ready for the spring offensive. Yeah, right. Okay. All right. Because when we close the lot down, we retreat to the Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and sing and drink and eat and all that all winter. And just raise hell. Yeah. Have lots of fun. All the neighbors come in, too. All except there's a chinquin living down the road quite a ways. An Asiatic bunch. Well, they're pretty good about keeping to themselves. They don't mess around. I never see them out in the yard or anything, so that's good. They're separatists. They're Asian separatists. Well, we went to the movies yesterday and to see a new film called Martian. Yeah. It's definitely worth seeing it. If you can look past all the Negroes and stuff that they've added into the movies, you know, every time they come out with a blockbuster movie, you've got more non-whites, that's for sure. But anyhow, the idea, the technology, and everything they went through to do this Mars shot and rescue and all that, it's fantastic. I would recommend it to anybody. Take your kids, too. But when you get home, tell them that those black guys that were in high position in there, that's pretty much a myth. Ain't gonna happen. I can just see Uncle Adolf calling in Negroes from Africa to help him set up the V-2s for shots at London. I just don't quite see that. And incidentally, after I watched the film, I had an epiphany a little bit that guess who we need to thank our lucky stars for the space program? Well, number one, we had one, Goddard here, that started rocketry in the United States way back before anybody, but really, it took Uncle Adolf to get the rocket program going. Even though it was a weapons program, it would have developed later in Germany, I'm sure, as space exploration. And so, can't we thank Uncle Adolf for pushing the buttons that got the space program going? Because I don't think the United States would have had a space program for maybe decades if it had been for bringing all the German scientists over here and bringing all those V-2s over and all that kind of stuff to check them out and figure it out. So next time somebody says Hitler did nothing good, well, you say, well, now, wait a minute. Nobody's all bad. Nobody's all good. What about the space program? Well, what do you mean? Well, you wouldn't have had a space program. There wouldn't have been a man on the moon for maybe ever, but at least for several decades. because the heart of the space program was German National Socialist. Yeah, so what do you think about that? Well, here's a little scuttlebutt I picked up off the web. Comment, well, I'm sure fighting skill pilots from the modern Air Force is a lot different than battling teenagers with rocks. They're talking about the Israeli Air Force. And you wonder why they haven't attacked Iran yet? The Israeli armed forces have got to be the most under-tested force ever considered to be a great military. Well, I saw a lot of Israeli soldiers while I was in Jerusalem and in Israel in general. And for the most part, they were all real young, and many of them were frail. Actually, it looked like a New York Jew accountants toting AK-47s around and stuff like that, or M-16s, I guess. So I didn't see what I would consider very manly. Some of the Israeli women, I think, were more manly than the male soldiers. Okay, here's another comment. Confirmation of my prediction 30 years ago of Israel's tangling with a capable fighting force. A five-second fight followed by a cabafetching retreat, kippis a flying. How long before the Eagles could have been liquidated? Less than 1 minute. Now the real fight in halls of Congress. Witnessing this rout, perhaps Lebanon will now ask the Russians assistance in protecting its airspace from terrorist aircraft. Yeah, there you go. There's a couple of comments to think about. That was from the recent story of the Israelis were flying around Syria at will, and the Russian pilots went up and chased them back to Heimeland. And I'm convinced that in the background in the Pentagon, there's got to be a few generals up there laughing their ass off. Because they realize how much the U.S. Congress and Senate just go gaga over this great, wonderful, powerful Israel. I think I sent this to you, but I'll read it to you because I think it's very interesting about this Russian-Israeli Air Force scuffle. Strategica 51. Six Russian multirole fighters, Sukhoi, Su-30, SM type, had put to flight and made them run Israeli fighters, McDonnell Douglas F-15, off the Syrian coast. I understood the F-15 was really not a very good aircraft. Too heavy and not maneuverable enough. I think that's the latest one. They're spending, what, $1 billion a piece on them or something? Israeli aircraft flying for months in Syrian airspace, and especially naval air station at Latakia, bridgehead of Russian forces in Syria. Now, this was obviously translated to English, so it's not too easy to read. Israeli aircraft generally follow a fairly complex flight plan and approach Latakia from the sea. In the night of 1 to 2 October 2015, six Russian Sukhoi Su-30s took off from SM Syrian Air Base Haimam towards Cyprus before intercepting position attack four Israeli F-15 fighters. Surprised by a situation as unexpected and probably not prepared for, a dogfight with one of the best Russian multirole fighters, Israeli pilots have quickly turned back to the south, flying at high speed towards Lebanon. The Lebanese army has officially announced that to the Z-2313 that four enemy aircraft, Israeli, had crossed the Lebanese airspace. This incident between the Russian and Israeli warplanes struck stupor command of the Israeli Air Force, which held that a possible air battle between the Israeli F-15 and the Russian Su-30 would have led to the destruction of four Israeli aircraft. Israel has strongly protested to Moscow, this incident, but the Russians demanded an explanation for the presence of Israeli fighter planes in full Syrian airspace. This incident indicates that the protection of Syrian airspace is now under the protection of the Russian Air Force, causing gnashing of teeth in Washington. The incident was ignored by the major news agencies, but political and media relay of Israel in the United States, Europe, and the Arab world will strengthen efforts to demonize Russian support to the Syrian government. That's the end of that. Very interesting. What do you bet that F-15 might be not long for this world? They may be recalling that thing. Well, this story affects white people, poor white people, too, instead of just blacks. A lot of times white separatists don't understand that many of the things that impact the black race also impact even more white poor. But unfortunately, the right wing scuttles the white working class, the poor whites, to be critical of the blacks, but not too critical, of course. Outlawed nearly 200 years ago with the 14th Amendment and reinforced more than 30 years ago by the Supreme Court's ruling in Bearden versus Georgia, judges are not allowed to send people to jail just because they're too poor to pay their court fines. Instead, judges are supposed to consider whether or not a defendant has the means to pay but is willfully refusing to do so. However, the Supreme Court did not outline how courts and judges are supposed to determine if a defendant's willfully not paying, leading to thousands of Americans being locked up for weeks and sometimes years for something as simple as a minor traffic ticket. The expectations of judges vary widely, with some expecting defendants to borrow the money from family members or use their welfare or disability income to pay court fees. Making matters worse is the fact that the defendants are charged for government services that were once free, including some that are constitutionally required. At least 41 states charge room and board for prison stays. At least 44 states bill offenders for their own probation and parole supervision. At least 43 states charge defendants for a public defender. Well, you see how that's going, don't you? Debtor's prison. We're going back to the old British style of court operations. Yeah, there you go. Well, and this too shall pass away. And I do know from reports I get from our friendly POWs that they're taking away all kinds of stuff that used to be free to the prisoners. And also they put them into these work programs that corporations are making a fortune off of. Plus the fact that the private prison industry is one of the top traded stock on Wall Street. They're making a fortune over these private prisons. And, of course, you can imagine what happens in these private prisons. If you don't, you better check with a POW. I know one of our people reports in Florida prisons they don't even supply you with shoes or sandals or anything like that. You've got to buy your own. And if you don't have any way of getting any money on your books, you're going to go barefoot, you know. Civil liberties groups have uncovered 15 states that have been on the increase in arrest warrants for debtors, and the 2008 financial crisis prompted a rise in debtor incarcerations. Well, the white people in general don't want to admit the bad things that are happening to white poor people. They want to pretend it's only Negroes. And that's a typical Republican point of view, of course. The stories, and also the Christian attitude that no matter how much a prisoner is persecuted in prison, it's okay because that's just good Old Testament Jewish punishment being handed out. The stories uncovered by various news agencies become more and more unbelievable. The deep deeper they dig in these modern-day debtors' prisons. Stephen Papa of Grand Rapids spent 3 weeks in jail for sneaking into an abandoned building because he was slapped with $2,600 in fees. Kyle DeWitt spent 3 days in jail for not being able to pay hundreds of dollars in fees associated with a criminal charge for catching bass out of season. Thomas Barrett, whose only income was from the selling of his own blood plasma, was slapped with hundreds of dollars in fines and fees for stealing a $2 can of beer. Despite skipping meals in an attempt to make payments, he eventually spent a year in jail. People are not just sent to jail for criminal justice debt, but also for private debt. Robin Sanders was pulled over and taken to jail for an outstanding medical bill. Yep, there you go. That's the predatory capitalists in action. People's freedom may be dependent on their ability to pay what sometimes amounts to thousands of dollars in fines and fees for menial traffic or quality of life citations. The rise of private prisons has coincided with the rise of private probation companies that operate as debt collectors with handcuffs and minimal to no oversight. A report issued by the Human Rights Watch specifically cites pay-only probation practices that exploit poor people who must set up installments because they are unable to pay an entire fine on a specific court date, as also disproportionately impacting poor people, of course. An increasing number of municipalities are also relying on fees to balance the budget shortfalls, leaving a city's most vulnerable residents to plug financial shortfalls. The circumstances faced by those who are put in jail for their inability to pay as they lose jobs, housing, and other basic necessities has led to some to commit suicide. I remember when I first moved here to Warsaw, I had not had a traffic ticket since 1961, and that was in California, and even that was a questionable one. And within a few months, I had already gotten 2 tickets here in this town. And when I went to court to fight it, it was obvious the fix was in. In fact, the DA and the judge were laughing. And I told you before, I told him, now that I see how the game is played. So that's what's going on. Of course, you'll see a lot more cops out at the time. Lower middle class and poor people go to work in the morning to get them on traffic tickets. It's become and also lowering the speed limit in certain areas to make speed traps. We have one especially here in town that is a route between 2 well-traveled highways. It's about a mile long, and it's 30 miles an hour. And there's really nothing there to reasonably have that low of speed limit. So you can you imagine 30 miles an hour? 30 miles an hour is like not even moving anymore. And it's not only the state police, but local police hang out behind the trees. So it's all revenue raising. You know, obviously, if there's someone driving recklessly or obviously drunk, weaving all over the highway, that's one thing. But a working man trying to go to work and driving a few miles over the limit, getting tickets, is ridiculous, because these tickets that used to be $25 or $30 are now up in $100, $150, $200. So anyhow, let me see here. Let's do a little bit more on this one. Let me get it here where I can read it. Prison time is not the only thing haunting America's poor. In at least 8 states, a person can have their driver's license suspended until criminal justice debt is paid. And 7 states require payment in full in order for people to regain the right to vote. America is already the world's leader in incarceration and is no longer considered by many to be the land of the free, but rather a place where people are commodified for profit, and freedom must be purchased. The country's most vulnerable citizens are bearing the biggest burden of an immoral and corrupt legal and economic system. The International Covenant of Civil and Political Rights lists debtors imprisoned as a civil rights violation, and it is time for Americans to treat its most vulnerable citizens with enough dignity to not value money more than their freedom. Well, here's one place where I pretty much go along or agree with the blacks in Ferguson, Missouri. I got to understand that here again, whether they're black or white, poor people are sitting ducks for these cops, and they run them up on traffic tickets, and that was what was happening in Ferguson. Every little thing, people were arrested and put on bail, had to pay bail and everything else. People get tired of that, no matter what color you are. So, but the Republican types, the neocons, they never look at that. They say, "Oh well, we gotta do the law like Christians, go by the Old Testament rather than the New." Do you ever notice how Christians really go for the old law, Old Testament stuff? And about forgiving people or anything like that, hell, let them eat cake, so I can understand why blacks in certain areas that get fed up with that shit riot. I would riot too. That doesn't mean I want to integrate with them. It just means I want the cops, the system is worse than the disease. I mean, let's listen to a little interview that's quite interesting, or a little thing. It was probably on PBS, and I'm not sure whether they said it's black or white or what, but anyhow, give it a listen. Well, I'll give it a listen when I get my program set up.
Some are calling modern day debtors prison. Yesterday, we told you how people around the country are sitting in jail because they can't pay court fines and fees, even though the Supreme Court outlawed that practice 3 decades ago. Today, NPR's Joseph Shapiro continues our series, Guilty and Charged, with a visit to Michigan.
This is the story of a young man who caught a fish out of season. He says he couldn't pay the fine, so he went to jail. I found Kyle DeWitt here.
This is where I like to come when I got a lot of things in my mind.
On a quiet stretch of the Grand River in Ionia, Michigan, catching fish.
Catfish, bass, rock bass, salmon, trout, bluegill, pike, walleye.
It was a bass that got DeWitt into trouble. He thought he'd caught a rock bass, which was in season, but the Department of Natural Resources agent said it was a smallmouth bass, which was out of season. DeWitt got a ticket. The fine plus fees added up to $155. DeWitt was 19. He was the father of a baby boy. He dropped out of high school. He was unemployed. He says he tried to find the money to pay. He knocked on neighbors' doors, offering to mow lawns or do chores, but he didn't come up with the $155.
DeWitt, this is C607947F. State of Michigan versus Kyle DeWitt. Are you Mr. DeWitt?
Yes, sir.
Which is how he wound up in Ionia County District Court in August of 2011 in front of a judge.
If you pay it all, there's no need to put you in jail.
Yes, sir.
Otherwise, we're kind of at that point. You saw what I've done with the other fines.
Yep.
I'd just soon get paid. It costs taxpayers money to put you in jail.
Yes, sir.
But if that's how it ends up, that's how it ends up.
There'd been confusion. Court officials said paperwork was mailed to DeWitt with instructions for paying off the fine in installments. But DeWitt, who as a teen moved from house to house, from his grandparents to his mother's to friends' houses, said he never got the letter. Now, 2 months after he caught that fish out of season, the fine had grown to more than $200.
I have a quick question for you guys.
Yeah?
I can bring $100 and pay on it tomorrow. I can bring $100 and once you guys open up, if that would be fine.
Well, it needs to be paid all or you need to do jail instead. Do you have a credit card?
No, sir.
You don't have any friends?
No, sir. My family don't even help me.
The judge in Ionia, Michigan, District Court Judge Raymond Vogt, says he needs to make sure there's respect for the law, even on a minor violation.
If I got someone standing in front of me for something that's labeled a misdemeanor, and they've failed to follow through with court orders on that, Am I supposed to tell the rest of the world, the rest of the law-abiding citizens, that they're chumps and fools for having respected the law and respected the court's orders? I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to make fools or chumps out of people who follow the law and comply with court orders.
The judge has a reputation for holding everyone to the same rules. Last year, Vogt's own cell phone went off in the middle of an attorney's closing argument. The judge held himself in contempt and fined himself $25, saying those were the rules. Still, others say the rules on fines and fees are unfair because they mostly hurt the poor.
Every day, poor people go to jail because they're poor.
Miriam Aukerman, an attorney with the ACLU of Michigan, took up Kyle DeWitt's case.
We live in a society in which debtors' prisons, and those were supposed to have ended in the 18th century, debtors' prisons are alive and well in Michigan and across the country. People go to jail because they're poor. And that's a two-tiered and unequal system of justice.
NPR looked at laws in every state and found more and more fees being imposed on defendants who come through the court system. The fees are used to fund the courts or other state programs. A person can owe hundreds or even thousands of dollars. People with money pay them off, but when poor people struggle to pay, there are late fees and more fees. We found hundreds of cases in Michigan and other states where people like Kyle DeWitt even go to jail. Not for the original minor offense, but for not paying those fees that keep piling up. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled defendants can be sent to jail, but only if they willfully refuse to pay a fine they could afford. Ron Schaefer, who prosecuted DeWitt, says judges will put defendants on payment plans they can afford. Trouble comes if they don't pay.
Are these folks really too poor to pay, or is it a matter of priorities? Are they unable to work and therefore unable to pay, or simply don't want to work?
My babies, I miss you so much. Mommy just couldn't wait to see you. I had to wake you up.
Yeah.
I love you, baby.
It's just after sunrise, and Kim Nash has come home after 11 days in jail. Only Nash, who's 23, didn't want her daughters, who are 2 and 3, to know she was in jail. She told them she was at the doctor's. But it's hard to keep secrets from kids, and her 3-year-old is smiling, a mischievous smile.
What, baby?
Zoe said you were at jail.
Oh, Zoe said I was at jail?
Yeah.
Oh.
When Kim Nash got stopped for driving without a license in Ionia, Michigan, she ended up owing nearly $1,400 in fines and fees. When the judge offered to put her on a payment plan of $25 to $40 a month, she agreed. But she never made any payments. Nash says that's because she was diagnosed with a serious illness. She left the job making auto parts. She says she couldn't work all day. She was in pain and she kept needing to take off for doctor's appointments. The prosecutor says she never contacted the court to explain. Nash was already barely getting by. She's got a cell phone, but she can't afford phone service, so she uses the phone just as a camera. When Nash was called back to court in July, she agreed to go to jail because that would erase her $1,400 in fines and fees.
Mommy was in jail, honey. You know, don't you, baby?
Yeah.
Mommy won't ever go to jail again, though, I promise you. Mommy went to jail because I couldn't pay money. I didn't have money to pay. That's why I went to jail. So now all my money is paid up, and I don't have to ever sit in jail again. Is that cool?
Yeah.
Do you want Mama to go back to jail?
No.
No. I missed you when I was there, though. Mommy thought about you every day.
Kim Nash may be done with the criminal justice system, but not Kyle DeWitt, who caught that fish out of season. About a year after he got out of jail, a letter arrived in the mail. It was a bill for room and board for each day he was in jail. It seemed like a lot of money to him.
I'd rather eat at Red Lobster for the $85 than what they made me eat in there.
NPR's survey of fees found that at least 41 states allow jails and prisons to charge room and board. It was another fee DeWitt says he couldn't afford, and it was turned over to a collection agency. To DeWitt, the whole thing makes no sense.
It was ridiculous because it was over a fish.
Some judges and politicians are starting to raise questions. The Ohio Supreme Court in February told judges to stop sending people to jail for not paying court costs. And Colorado, just this month, made it law to stop jailing people too poor to pay their fines and fees. Joseph Shapiro, NPR News.
Now, the typical upper middle class or wealthy white Christian or Jew is going to say, oh, well, they deserve it. They didn't follow the rules. But on the fish story, I mean, why couldn't it be like $25 or $50 or no more than $100 for something like that? But now the lawmakers that get antsy make laws. In California, I know that there's usually 2,500 new laws put on the books every year. Now they say no knowledge of the law is no excuse. Well, I mean, let's hold all these legislators for that, you know, like giving them drug tests before they go into the chambers and so forth. Every judge has to take a drug test before he goes to sit on the bench. You want democracy? Well, let's have a little democracy here. But like I say, these more wealthy whites, they look down on the poorer whites because they just write it off to they're lazy, you know. they don't want to work and all this kind of stuff. Well, they're finding out now after 2008 that millions of Americans that want to work can't work because there's no jobs, because the same people, they're inflicting the fines on them and putting them in jail for not paying, are the same people who work to send their jobs and industry out of the country. So it comes back always to he who has the money makes the rules. And most of the time they're bad rules for the working class. Well, it must be pretty plain by now to even the most stupid white person that there's a move on to displace, change, and move out white people from the different white countries. The invasion of Europe is about the replacement, displacement of Europeans, white Europeans. German woman becomes the second to be evicted from her home to make room for migrants. Yeah. As the country begins printing its constitution in Arabic for refugees to learn. Do you think this is some little accident that all this is happening worldwide? Are you kidding? There's definite devious and even worse than devious people behind all this shit. And they're in the background. And they need to be dealt with. Yes, dealt with. Gabriel Keller, 56, told to leave her home of 23 years by the end of this year. She said, "It's a scandal to throw tenants out. I can't see the sense of it." Mayor says the alternative would have been to set up beds in the gym. No, the alternative is to not let them into your country. Germany is struggling to cope with an influx of 800,000 refugees this year. You're telling me that the German military can't keep 800,000 people out of Germany? The desert wolf would turn over in his grave. That's right. It kills me how they plead they can't stop them. They can't stop them. Well, I'll tell you what. When they thought the Germans might invade America, they had emplacements and armaments all over the East Coast. They had giant guns everywhere. And the Germans didn't invade this country. Neither did the Japanese. So whenever anybody ever says they can't stop an invasion of people, they're lying. They just don't have the will to do it, or there's an ulterior motive behind it. This all comes from regime change. That's where it comes from. The powers that be want to knock out leaders and replace them with their own leaders for the corporate structure of the world. And so as they have to bomb the crap out of all these countries to get rid of the leader that they don't like and put a leader in that they do like, the people flee the countries. And of course, they're fleeing to Europe and so forth. Same thing's happening here. The Mexicans have become a lesser amount of people invading this country. Most of the people invading in large quantities now are from all over the world, and Africa and every place, you see, so. It can be solved. Of course it can be solved, but it takes people with the will to solve it. And, of course, the white sheep of North America, unless goaded with an electric prod, are not going to do it. And you're not going to have leaders who want to do it because they know what the corporate ruling class want, and they're going to follow those instructions. Just shut up and go to work. And the media is worthless. Most of the media is worthless because they come up all the time with the problem, but they never come up with a solution other than bad solutions. It's a scandal. Gabrielle Keller shows the termination notice issued by her local consul, telling her she must leave her home of 23 years to make way for migrants in the German town of Eschbach. The local municipality has given Mrs. Keller until the end of the year to leave her flat in the southern town of Eschbach. Mario Schaefli, the town's mayor, says the authorities had no choice. No choice? Of course they had a choice. They should refuse to allow these so-called migrants, illegal aliens, into the town. And the people should rise up and force the mayor by pain of death to do it. The consul hasn't taken a frivolous decision, he told Welt newspaper. Of course it's not frivolous, it's dictatorial and despotic. Her case comes days after it emerged that a citizen, a nurse, was being evicted from her home of 16 years for the same reason. You know, nurses are in demand, and you need nurses. That's a viable job. Bettina Halbe, 51, received a letter from her landlords telling her that her building was being turned into a refugee shelter. She has until May to leave her flat in the western German town of Neheim. I was completely taken back. Mrs. Haley told Welt newspaper, I find it impossible to describe how the city has treated me. Migrants crowd in line as they wait for their registration as refugee centers in Berlin. Germany is struggling to cope with an expected influx of some 800,000 refugees this year. They're invaders. They're illegal aliens. And they should sue the military-industrial complex of the United States. And if that don't work, take up the guns against them, or whatever you got. Jostling for a new life in Europe. New life. Migrants crowd in a line as they wait for their registration at a refugee center in Berlin. Germany is struggling to cope with an expected influx of 800,000. Well, why don't they struggle to keep the 800,000 out? Even if they have to spend half their GNP to keep them out, it'd be worth it. Yesterday, it was announced that Germany had translated the first 20 articles of the country's constitution outlining basic rights like freedom of speech into Arabic for refugees to help them integrate. Well, tell the guy who wants to talk about Hitler or the Nazis and say they're good or fly a Nazi flag, how much free speech has he got in Germany? We're going to give all the non-white Arabic people freedom of speech. Germany's open-door policy to migrants has sparked clashes with some Eastern EU member states, in particularly Hungary. I'm glad some people over there have the balls to do something. It has also fueled tensions domestically with riots erupting between left and right-wing hardline groups and fights breaking out among migrant groups, with up to 10,000 arrivals each day fueling voters' worries. President Joachim Gauck, who has a non-political role, hit a nerve with a speech on Sunday saying that there is a limit to how many refugees Germany can absorb. Duh. Aside from the cost of practicalities of looking after so many people, almost 1% of Germany's population Many voters are worried about how they will integrate into society. Worried, they should be terrified. Germany welcomes migrants offloaded by Hungary. Yeah. They don't want you in Hungary? Come on over here to the fatherland. The ghosts of the National Socialists will all be turning over in their grave. You've got to understand, once things get too bad or beyond the pale, there's only one way out. And you don't have necessarily much of a chance, maybe even of winning, but at least you can go down fighting. And they want to make this bitch the president during Carly Fiorina's triumphant performance in the wretched carnival that was the Second Republican debate. She picked a perfect moment to play the Steve Jobs card. The subject had turned to her tenure as CEO of HP. Her friends say she did such a wonderful job. The single aspect of her resume that vaguely qualifies her as a presidential candidate. Industry observers have contended that she did her job very poorly. And indeed, when the board dismissed her in 2005, Hewlett-Packard's stock price rose by 7%. Meanwhile, Fiorina fell to earth with the aid of a $40 million gold parachute. Is that the kind of woman you'd like to see as president? Even though I don't, they're all creeps as far as I'm concerned. And they're all for more invasion by third world people, too. None of them are opposed to it. At least Trump has said some things about it, but how serious he is yet to be seen. So she got rewarded with $40 million golden parachute for being a bad CEO. Ms. Fiorina's train wreck stint at HP has been well documented, but I want to address one tiny but telling aspect of her misbegotten reign, an episode that involved her good friend Steve Jobs. It is the story of the HP iPod. The iPod, of course, was Apple's creation, a groundbreaking digital music player that let you have a music library in your pocket, introduced in 2001. It gained steam over the next few years, and by the end of 2003, the device was a genuine phenomenon. So it was news that in January 2004, Steve Jobs and Carly Fiorina made a deal where HP could slap its name on Apple's wildly successful product. Nonetheless, HP will still manage to botch things. It could not have been otherwise, really, because Steve Jobs totally outsmarted the woman who now claims she can run the United States of America. I can talk about this with some authority. Not only have I written a book about iPod, but I interviewed Fiorina face-to-face when she introduced the HP iPod at the 2004 Consumer Electronics Show, and then got Steve Jobs' side of the story. It was at CES that year that HP announced its version of the iPod. That itself was pathetic. The company's motto at the time was invent, but at the biggest event in technology world, HP's big newsmaking announcement was that it's selling someone else's invention. Nonetheless, in our interview on January 8th, just off the show floor, Fiorina boasted about co-branding the iPod as if it had been an innovative coup for her own company. Apple chose her company, she told me, because HP is a company that's an innovator. We believe in innovation is our lifeblood. It's why Invent sits on our logo. So why sell someone else's product? She described her strategy as focused innovation. That's like Indira Gandhi used to call India, a guided democracy. In other words, a dictatorship. Apparently, this meant throwing in the towel when a competitor came up with something really good. It didn't seem like a recipe for success, and indeed, HP was not successful at it. For a number of reasons, but before I get to that, let's contemplate what Apple got in return for allowing HP to rebrand iPods and share the loot. HP agreed to preload Apple's iTunes music software and to store into its personal computers. This was a hugely valuable concession. Apple had only recently begun to push this key software into the Windows world. Millions of HP Compaq customers would instantly become part of Apple's entertainment ecosystem. If it were a straight deal for HP to include Apple's software, the fee might have been hundreds of millions of dollars. Around that time, software companies were paying huge sums to have their products or services pre-installed, since people seldom deleted them and often used the default choices. Even better, pre-installing iTunes was a way for Apple to stifle Microsoft's competitor to iTunes Music Store. As an Apple leader at the time puts it, quote, "This was a highly strategic move to block HP Compaq from installing Windows Media Store on their PCs. We wanted iTunes Music Store to be a definitive winner. Steve only did this deal because of that." One might even argue that since Carly Fiorina wasn't making much profit from selling computers, each machine or company sold under this deal delivered more value to Apple than it did to HP. In return, HP got the right to sell iPods, but not in a way that could possibly succeed. Fiorina boasted to me that she would be able to sell the devices in thousands of retail outlets. Up to that point, Apple mostly sold them online and in its own stores. But by that time, in mid-2004, that HP actually began selling its branded iPods, Apple was expanding to multiple retail outlets on its own. And soon after HP began selling iPods, Apple came out with a new improved iPod, leaving HP to sell an obsolete device. Fiorina apparently did not secure the right to sell the most current iPods in a timely fashion and was able to deliver newer models only months after the Apple versions were widely available. Well, this is part of a longer article. I'm not going to read it all, but you really want this incompetent female fool to be president? I don't think so. Well, she might be almost as competent as Obama. Who knows? Hey, TT. Not sure your opinion on Stormfront, but would love to hear it. After contributing to them and being active, I have found that they are very weak. Personal experience is that Mr. Black is not a leader, but simply a follower. Well, I've known that for, 40 years, 30 years? He's Mr. Duke's, I don't know what you want to call him, but anyhow, he wouldn't do anything without conferring with Mr. Duke. I don't call him a doctor because I have no real proof. And, of course, he didn't become a doctor in the United States. He went to the obscure corner of Eastern Europe to get him to become a doctor. After thousands of posts and sending money, they banned me for life for a simple comment. Wow, it must have been really tragic to get banned for life. That's sort of a joke, being banned for life from Stormfront. Whose life? David Duke's life or your life? It was about leaders of the movement. I said you were a great one along with others, and so on. I simply made a comment that Duke should clear up the issue of using Aryan donations for gambling. But respect, he is a thorn in the Zog's side. Well, I guess is that why the media always called David Duke when there was something they consider major going on? If he's such a thorn in their side, why do they call him every time something comes up? Well, I guess Mr. Black has his lips so far up Duke's ass that simple comment got to be a life ban. First pissed and then realized that the weak Stormfront members, maybe that is a good thing. Anyway, point is that I expect our Aryan leaders to spend some contributions to support themselves. Hell, you've been in it for life in this movement. But if you are gambling it away, which I now think is true of David Duke on how fast they banned me, it's another story. First, I just want to most importantly thank you for being a true Aryan leader. And second, get your thoughts on Black and Duke. Also, let you know every month that you will be getting a contribution from me. So thank you, sir, for being a true leader. Well, thank you very much. And I'll give you a few thoughts as far as Stormfront. I don't believe those operations are that effective. Number one, ideologically, I disagree. I tend to be what I would refer to as an Aryan socialist. These people are on the periphery of the right-wing neocon capitalists. Because you'll see that these people will always vote Republican, and almost all the people on Stormfront. There may be a few that don't. But anyhow, that's the way I look at things. And giant chat boards are not only a waste of time, but they are attract agents to sit by the keyhole and see if anybody says anything that might be indictable. In other words, put them in jail. And also the psychopaths that a lot of them that call in to Stormfront or write in are there to attract other well-meaning people to their nefarious causes, which always fail, because these are causes that usually include violence, and the right wing is racial struggle has never learned, except in rare instances, how to apply violence and win and get someplace. Anyhow, I'm sure that they take in a reasonable amount of money, and I consider that they're on the right, and I haven't been on the right for a long time. And so I don't have too much more to say about it. I don't really care what Mr. Duke and Mr. Black are doing. I don't follow the Stormfront at all, and don't get excited about. I do every once in a while. I hear David Duke's going to be in the news, and if I'm around, I'll listen to him. He's got one approach, and he tries to be able to say he's not a racist or whatever, you know. I know he said he's a Christian. I know that's a lie. I question sometimes his psychological makeup as a... Anyhow, and also his possible race, sexual makeup, but we won't go into that. Okay. So that's really about all I got to say, and I don't carry on a fight or debate with Duke and his people. Only to say that most of the time they're wrong. And they don't want to say white. They always want to say, well, we're European Americans. Well, you know how many, what are you going to say now that millions of non-white Mid-Easterners are in Europe? And then they come from there over here. Are they Euro-Americans too? Are they white? Come on, you guy, you chicken shit. And, of course, Duke always wants to play down the Black thing. You don't want to come on like J.B. Stoner. Yeah, he likes to play that down, but when you have him in private conversation, as I had many times, that's not the way he talks in private conversation. And I don't respect people who talk totally different in private conversation than they do in the public. I think you'll find that most of the time I talk pretty much the same. Hey, Tom, I stay in touch with you from time to time. I listen to all the shows on Resist.com since 2002 to date. Former National Alliance guy and federal prisoner, I began to associate with the war banner in 2004. I'm a full-time eBayer and dumpster diver. I've been such a successful dumpster diver that I live pretty well in a nice condo in nearly all white area. You and some of your other war wolves and myself seem to have gotten back to thrift, with an emphasis on health and the way of a simpler life. The public hates organizations like the Klan, Creators, NSM, and so on. Those of us with war ideology network with family, friends, and neighbors, try to be healthy and prepare for the worst. without getting on Zog's radar. The whites may keep dwindling as we are bred marginally and nearly overran to extinction, but my eyes are tearing up right now because I know we will come back with a roar, like we always do when our race is backed into the corner. We have wolves everywhere, and that comes out of a southern state. Yes. And that person sent me a picture. He lifted his shirt, and just above his belly button is about a 3 or 4 inch tattoo of our war patch, the one with the Jolly Roger on the front. How about that? And he had SS bolts on his neck. I don't approve, I don't promote putting tattoos on your body if you haven't done it already, because it's one of the easiest ways for the federales to identify you. So if you haven't put tattoos on your body, I would recommend you not do it, simply for security's sake. I have 2 tattoos on my body, fairly large ones, I guess. One is about 5 inches long and 3 inches wide on my forearm, and the other is on my upper left arm, which is about an 8-inch by 3-inch tattoo. I got them while I was in the military and running around Amsterdam, Holland. I'm not ashamed of them, however, I would say that I was 18 years old, and if I could have not gotten them, I would have been better off. But I don't really. Once you've got tattoos, you don't even think about having tattoos until somebody mentioned it. I do get a lot of comment on my one tattoo on my upper arm, left hand arm, and that is a jaguar from the jungle wrapped with a boa constrictor and fighting, with the actual blood marks of the claws of the jaguar into the arm. I like that one. I sure do. More than the other one. Of course, they get you in jail or prison, some Jew prison doctor. We'll figure it out and come up with all kinds of crazy stuff. And one more comment. That's part of America's cultural degeneration. When I was in Germany, the roads flowed because everyone was respectful and followed the rules. Now Merkel has killed that even in Germany. And if only I could get a 1400 horsepower, if only I could get 1400 HP out of the old Mercedes-Benzes. The late 80s diesels weren't the fastest, but if you buy one now, it will last you forever. Those in the 90s Volvos are the most solid cars built. Well, I'll agree with that. If you want a car that'll just hang in there and just keep going, an older 80s Mercedes diesel is, they'll go forever. And one of them I had was a 4-door, 85, I believe, and I loaned it to a crazy buddy of mine, and he got drunk and rolled it down a mountainside, and I'm talking, it was a rough roll, too, and that thing was caved in like a beer can, but he survived, so they're very safe, too, to ride in. And back when I was running around California, I was picking those things up for about $500 at auctions. One of the reasons were that the Mexicans didn't know how to work on them, and they didn't like them. They liked Toyotas and Datsuns and all that kind of stuff. But they wouldn't touch the older Mercedes. And don't forget, you can run one of them on cooking oil if you want to. In closing, I'll comment that I see something come up here on Brass Check. Detecting and defeating election fraud. Well, let me tell you something. It's not just machines that are fraudulent. The whole system is fraudulent, including all the fraudulent people running for office. So if you're going to clean up election fraud, you've got a big job to do, man. I don't envy that job.
Rogers.
If it burns, sir, won't we hit our own troops?
Yes. But we'll hit theirs as well. We have reserves.